Nikki Yoxall, how are
Hello,
you?
Hello, Mark. I'm all right, thank you. How are
good.
You?
I'm good. You've got your Excellent. Pasture for Life badge on, but I know that you are a woman of many roles. So what are you up to? What's happening?
Yeah, so I'm head of research at Pasture for Life, which is great because it means I get to spend lots of time with academics and farmers who are all involved in the transition. But I'm also farming with my husband in northeast Scotland. Yep. So we run a grazier business, and we're currently predominantly working with rewilding organisations, actually, to kind of explore how rewilding and regenerative agriculture can kind of find some, can kind of coalesce into a middle ground so that we can have wilder landscapes while still feeding people locally. Yeah. Really important, because you know we need to have community prosperity as well as nature. And then I'm also doing a PhD as well. So Ooh. Yeah.
Now, a little bird told me you're doing your research, and that little bird was you last night in the bar. But you were saying that there's some interesting stuff coming out of your research around this whole agenda of, if you like, this big transition from industrial, global, chemical.
Yeah.
Blah, 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 where everyone makes money except the farmer.
Yeah.
And the citizen gets food that's completely useless, to this sort of local processing, growing, rearing, eating.
Yeah, so I think one of the things, so within my PhD research, what I'm looking at is the agroecological transition. So, what is enabling, what is supporting, what is getting in the way of farmers making that transition? The area that I'm particularly interested in is influenced by systems thinking. This kind of framework is this premise that there are three requirements for deep level transition and transformation to happen. And one of them is that we reconnect with nature.
Reconnect with nature, what, as human beings?
Just humans, as humans.
Different,
that we, we reconnect with understanding that the soil and life is what nourishes us and enables us to live, rather than an extractive
part of nature.
Exactly, so reconnection, that we're not kind of removed from it, so that we are deeply embedded in these ecosystems. So that's the kind of first pillar, if you like, is reconnecting with nature. The second is about rethinking the way we learn. So, and I think this is, Groundswell's a great place to talk about this, because it's all about peer support, coming together. It's not one person telling you how you should farm. It's about how we collectively explore different ideas, different ways of thinking, different ways of doing things. And that's often very locally or regionally relevant and specific. But also we can have localities that are developing online, so the kind of all these WhatsApp groups where all these different farmers from all over the country or all over the world are coming together to explore things. So we've got reconnect with nature, rethink the way we learn, and then restructure our institutions. And that kind of governance bit is almost too challenging for us to look at. We know what needs to happen, and we just need to have different people in power, don't we? So what I'm interested in then is, okay, let's almost discount the governance bit, because it's so out of our control.
Well, I think also there is this piece that deep change is very rarely driven from the established organisations.
Exactly.
They can't, because they're hardwired to be really good at the system that we're now trying to change.
They want to maintain business as usual. So kind of parking that third leg, if you like, of the stool, and actually I'm really, really interested in this, how are farmers using the rethinking ways of learning and reconnecting with nature to shift their farm businesses, but also their local food systems, their communities, towards a more fair, equitable, ecologically sound way of producing, processing, selling, consuming food.
So it's not just about, it's not just about measuring bugs. It's also about how the wealth that flows, or the value that flows around the food system,
it's redistributed. And it's also about abundance, and I think recognizing that wealth and value are not only attributed in financial terms, but actually come from other ways of thinking about, what do we value on our farms, what do we value in our food systems. And talking to some pretty output focused, what would maybe be considered conventional farmers, in generally in pastured systems, like in grass-based systems, but who are suddenly finding value in that block of trees that they can just stick their heifers in for a couple of days because the weather's bad. And historically would never have done that. And, actually really valuing the huge amount of orchids that have appeared because they extended their rotation a little bit and created a bit more rest in the system. And suddenly they're noticing these things. And I think the more farmers that start to notice this good stuff that's happening on their farms, then start to think, well, hang on, that was a nice thing to notice. That's something different. What else can I do within my farm system to generate more of that? and actually recognising that this kind of abundance doesn't just mean I'm getting a bigger check at the end of the month, but is giving them a greater sense of well-being, engagement with their land, stewardship, rather than ownership or service to the supply chain.
And so, you know, what have you seen that's like you're really excited about?
I think it is that shift from these farmers who are, you know, historically sort of said, well, nature lives at the hedges and edges, and I've got some nice hedges, and I've got a bit over there.
Can you give us an example without naming names, but, you know.
Yeah, so like a...
Oh, you can name names.
Well, I kind of have to keep the confidentiality of my research participants. But yeah, sort of, dairy farmers in North Wales who are doing some amazing stuff, you know, discussion groups and grass-based dairy systems in North Wales are quite far ahead of many other, you know, I would say significantly further ahead than in southwest Scotland, where I'm looking at some other dairy farms, but who are really noticing and valuing, probably driven by cost, like reducing their fertiliser use, but managing their grazing better and then getting all these additional benefits of like a field full of orchids that they've never noticed before. And I think that is then pushing them to say to the supply chain, well, hang on, you need to be recognising this, and we need to be kind of compensated and supported to do more of this rather than just producing huge volumes of milk regardless of the cost. And I think the supply chain, there are some supply chain actors now who are responding to that, particularly in dairy. You know, Arla are definitely exploring more of this, First Milk, Mona Dairies. There are all these organisations within the dairy supply chain who I think are picking up the baton and this stuff, which is really, really exciting.
Yeah.
We have to just be careful it doesn't become a greenwash.
Well, I mean, one of the things I think about a lot is that if you essentially create a more regenerative, whatever word we want to use, a more ecologically sound production systems, but you stay in the same supply chain, you get this process where initially everyone's very excited and they hand you... is that a helicopter?
I can hear it, but it's not over.
Okay, let me say that again. So...
Oh, hang on.
Ready? Now it got louder.
Give it a minute.
Just let him... Let him bugger off. Some man started his drill up after it. Tell me when you're happy with the...
That's pretty good.
Okay, so one of the things that we think about a lot is the risk of what happens is you make all these changes, but the basic structure of the system stays the same.
Yeah.
And then what happens is you go from being the hot, new, sexy product that everybody's being nice to you in the supply chain, and then you get handed back to the buying department, and the margins get squeezed, and you know, that social side...
Yeah.
Doesn't happen, but you know, are the people that you're seeing who are doing other things to kind of end up talking directly to people?
Yeah, I think we're
the people who eat the food.
Totally, within Pasture for Life, without a doubt, more and more farms are saying we want to sell by the kilo, not by the ton. Whatever it is we're producing, you know, we want to think local. We want to think about direct sales. One of the challenges is that requires, as you well know, this additional skill set. You've got to learn. So, you know, we sell our meat direct to our local customer base. It's the bit of the job that I get the most satisfaction from in terms of people saying that was the best steak I've ever eaten.
Yeah.
But at the same time, it takes a huge amount of time to do all of that admin, the marketing. It's not, you know, that's not the thing I love.
No.
And actually, that side of thing, it's hard. It's hard work. Yeah. It is hugely rewarding, but it is difficult. And I would love to see far more kind of cooperative models where specialists were able to be employed almost in a, you know, I don't think that it needs to be a not-for-profit model, because we need profit. We need profit to reinvest and to support our farmers to do things differently. But if there were opportunities for more cooperative coalitions of people to come together.
Sort of, you know, sales and processing, depending on the amount, but processing and retail that guarantees a fair price and a reliable offtake.
Yeah.
Would be be a different world.
Be a game changer, completely. Yeah. And I think also finding ways, quite often within sort of pasture for life or in, you know, the 100% pasture fed ruminant and livestock world, we get accused of only producing meat that rich people can afford, you know, and that's not going to create change, because the people that can afford it will afford it, and then there's all these people that are being squeezed by the cost of living crisis and can't afford this food. But we're seeing some really nice examples of farms matching local supermarket prices and actually set, and that's something we do, and our input costs are so low that actually we don't have to you know, charge a premium because it costs us so little to produce that beef because we're relying on nature to do the heavy lifting. And I think there are some nice examples. I guess the cynic in me says that it's easy for farmers to go, well, we're going on this, you know, amazing regenerative low input system and we're going to charge you a premium for doing so. Well, you know, do we need to charge a premium? Maybe we do, but actually that's potentially feeding back into that historic system that hasn't been serving everybody's needs.
Yeah.
And maybe kind of, and this comes back to this thing that I talk about quite a lot, which is knowing what's enough. If on your farm and in your life, you know how much money you need to make to live the kind of life you want to live, you don't always have to chase growth and increased profit. You just need to know what you need. And yeah. I think that's...
Love that.
Yeah, like that's been a game changer for me in my life. Like actually, how much cash do I need in my bank account every month to live the life I want to live? And how can I leverage all my skill sets, hence why I wear many hats, to bring that cash in?
Yeah.
And you know, that's a part-time farm business, that's doing a PhD, that's working for Pasture for Life. All of those things give me income that I can then use to kind of get to that point of that's enough.
So you started talking about the beginning of this, you talked about changing our relationship with our understanding of who we are in nature.
Yeah.
And now you're talking about, you know, really asking different questions about what matters.
Yeah.
And so when you look forward 10, 20 years, what do you imagine is possible? You know, I mean, this place has just grown. Here we are.
Oh, my God, like in 3 years it's grown, hasn't it?
It's unbelievable.
It's crazy.
You know, how many more people are engaging with different levels of...
Yeah, and different types of people from different parts of the sort of supply chain or whatever. But
so if you could dream about... Well, not dream, but what do you think is possible with this edge of what I would call deep disruption?
Yeah.
I mean, clearly we can have Unilever with... regenerative knobs on, but you know, on this sort of whole structural change, what do you think is possible?
I think less competition, more collaboration.
Yeah.
And competition is hardwired, and I'm saying this as one of the most competitive people I know. So it's hard, you know. Like I am. That's why I'm not allowed to go to auctions anymore because I'm just like trying to win everything there, even whether I need it or not. I own the most expensive muck fork in Aberdeenshire because I got overexcited at an auction once. But
let somebody else.
Yeah, no way was that bloke across the ring going to win that muck fork. But anyway, so yeah, you know, like for me, competition is deeply ingrained in how I approach things, and I've really had to learn that actually collaboration's far more effective,
especially in the world of business.
And we talk about plants. I mean, it's fascinating, just the whole, you know, Nicole Masters ran these amazing courses over the last couple of days, and you know, sadly I wasn't able to go, but our whole way of thinking about plants and how ecosystems function is just shifting, and that's what's really exciting. So, you know, for years and years we've been told it's about, you know, you've got to, these plants need to outcompete these plants, or we've got to create plant competition, or it's always this kind of assumption that plants are elbowing each other out the way, but actually that's just not really what happens. There's this incredible underground world that we know so little about, really. You know, the sciences and the understanding is growing all the time, but under the ground all these plants are cooperating and collaborating to give each other the nutrients that each other needs. And you know, some of them are coping with the drought and some aren't, and then at different times different plants behave in the way that the ecosystem needs them to function. And if we could all be a bit more like that, that would be great. And I think we're learning how that looks underground. The next step is how do we replicate that? How do we respond in the same way and help each other and not be kind of worried that someone's going to outdo somebody else and that we're going to lose out? Because actually we don't all have to lose out. We could just, you know, get on better.
We can all win.
We can all win. Which is good for a competitive person.
Exactly. Nikki, thank you so much.
No worries.
A pleasure.
Thank you. Sorry, I went on a bit.